You take a seed, you plant it, you grow it, you dry it, you roll it, you smoke it, and it goes down smooth. Hey!
Spanning the continent to bring you the truth about cannabis and marijuana law reform.
I smoke pot and I like it a lot.
The Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation. Now, here's your host, Radical Russ Belville.
Good day, tokers and tokettes and non-toking lovers of liberty. It is Thursday, January 29th, 2015, and it's got to be 420 somewhere in the world. Hope you're having an excellent day today, and we also want to wish a happy birthday to our contributor on Roots Monday, Bacon Dan. That's right, Bacon Dan PDX on Twitter. Send him a tweet, wish him a happy birthday. Also want to say howdy to Wiz Calico. He was here in the studio just a few minutes ago, had to take off, but had some discussions with Wiz Calico about bringing him back to the 420 Radio Network with a new show, Calico Vision. So that might be coming soon to the 420 Radio lineup. Stay tuned for that. We'll keep you posted. All right, on today's show, we've got plenty of stuff to bring to you, news and interviews you can use for the cannabis community. At half past, we have our regular Cops Say Legalized Drugs segment, and joining us for the segment today, Rusty White, who is both a former canine trainer and a former correctional officer. I'm really interested in his history training police dogs and how the world of the police dog changes now that we have four states that have legalized marijuana. Rusty White comes up at half past. Then we'll have time for a radical rant at the end, 45 past the hour. I ask the question, imagine there's no alcohol. It's not easy if you try. And just some stories lately that have really gotten my ire up due to this double standard, this treatment of legal marijuana so differently than the treatment of legal alcohol in this country. So we're going to take a look at the cultural acceptance of alcohol in America and how it so differs from what we're dealing with in the marijuana movement. Also on the show today, we'll have time for some drug war data mining. There's some new numbers coming out of New York City that show Mayor Bill de Blasio and Commissioner Bratton's efforts to reduce marijuana-related arrests and summons is having some effect. We'll take a look at what those changes are, and hopefully those will continue. Also, we'll go behind the headlines today. We reported yesterday on Loretta Lynch, who is President Obama's nominee to become Attorney General, and her reaction to questioning from Alabama Senator Jeff Sessions on whether or not she agrees with marijuana legalization and if she agrees with the president that marijuana is no more dangerous than alcohol. Her responses got some rave reviews from Kevin Sabet, but marijuana reformers like Mason Tvert, Tom Angel, and myself aren't that concerned about what she had to say. We'll tell you all about it in detail in Behind the Headlines. But we start things off, as we always do, with the 420 Radio News. And in the headlines today, as we mentioned, the Attorney General nominee says she does not support the legalization of marijuana. We've got a bill introduced in the New Hampshire House to decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana. U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer, my congressman, is demanding to know who in the federal government intimidated Oregon's M Bank to pull out of Colorado marijuana business services. A bill to decriminalize in Virginia's state Senate. We just barely reported on this. It's already dead. We'll tell you how it died. And the Denver airport has banned pot-themed souvenirs, worried that marijuana might taint the image of the Rocky Mountain High State. We'll talk about that a little in the rant as well. Plus, stay tuned for Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio, where we're going to look at some other stories, including the Seattle Seahawks' Marshawn Lynch and the team in general, how their coach, Pete Carroll, kind of supports marijuana use for the health of the players. All that and more coming up on the Russ Belville Show.
To the Russ Belville Show, the voice of the marijuana nation.
You can get 420 Radio on the go with our Shoutcast stream for all internet-enabled media players. Go to rad-r.us/420shout or just click the Shoutcast icon below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Sir, do you think there will or should come a time for us to discuss the possibility of legalization, regulation, and control of all drugs, thereby doing away with the violent criminal market as well as a major source of funding for international terrorism? Thank you so much for your time, Mr. President.
Well, I think this is an entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Name the time and place, Mr. President. Radical Russ has been prepping for this debate full-time since 2005. The Russ Belville Show.
Connect with 420radio.org through social media, on Twitter at 420radio.org, and our Facebook page at 420radio.org. Follow us and like us today. You'll be glad you did. This is Radical Russ encouraging you to take a look at the Weed Blog every day. Johnny Green and the staff at the Weed Blog are on top of all the latest developments in the fight to end marijuana prohibition nationwide. You can even get the Weed Blog on your smartphone by installing the Weed Blog app for iPhone and Android. If it's about weed, it's on the Weed Blog, including my original writing. So don't delay. Read the Weed Blog today. It's time for the 420 Radio News, covering the latest headlines in consumer cannabis, medical marijuana, and industrial hemp. Transcripts of 420 Radio News are available daily on our website at 420radio.org. Now, here's Russ Belville with your marijuana headlines in 4 minutes and 20 seconds. This is your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 29th, 2015. Loretta Lynch, the nominee for Attorney General, said Wednesday during her confirmation hearing that she does not support the legalization of marijuana and that she disagrees with President Barack Obama's remarks about the drug being no more dangerous than alcohol. In a 2014 New Yorker profile of Obama, the president discussed his marijuana use as a young person. In that article, Obama called pot, quote, a bad habit and a vice, end quote, and said he views it as more or less similar to the cigarettes he also used to smoke, adding, quote, I don't think it is more dangerous than alcohol, end quote, according to Obama. When Sessions, the senator from Alabama, asked Lynch if she agreed with Obama's remarks about his marijuana use, she appeared to take a harder line than the president, saying, quote, I certainly don't hold that view, and I don't agree with the view of marijuana as a substance, end quote, Lynch said, logically implying she believes marijuana is more dangerous than alcohol. A bill has been introduced in the New Hampshire House of Representatives that would remove criminal penalties for possession of small amounts of marijuana. The House passed a nearly identical bill last year by a vote of 215-92, but the Senate refused to consider it. House Bill 618, sponsored by Representative Adam Schroeder of Newmarket and a bipartisan group of 7 co-sponsors, would make possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana punishable by a civil fine of up to $100. It would also make cultivation of up to 6 marijuana plants a Class A misdemeanor instead of a felony. Currently, possession of any amount of marijuana is a misdemeanor punishable by up to 1 year in prison and a fine of $2,000. New Hampshire is the only state in New England that treats simple marijuana possession as a criminal offense with the potential for jail time. U.S. Representative Earl Blumenauer is demanding to know who in the federal government intimidated an Oregon bank that had promised to work with legal marijuana businesses. Oregon's M Bank made headlines last week when it announced it would be taking marijuana-related business in Colorado, where legal marijuana retailers struggle to find banking services. But this week, M Bank announced it was pulling out of Colorado. Industry insiders revealed to the Denver Post that the reversal was due to intimidation by federal banking officials who told M Bank executives that interstate banking for marijuana businesses was too risky due to marijuana remaining illegal under federal law. Blumenauer wrote a letter to the Federal Deposit Insurance Corporation, or FDIC, Chairman Martin Grunberg, asking for clarification on what guidance the FDIC provides to banks who offer financial services to marijuana-related businesses, and what role, if any, the FDIC played in MBank's decision to abruptly suspend operations in Colorado. A bill to decriminalize possession of small amounts of marijuana for adults died in the Virginia Senate Court of Justice Committee. 5 Democrats voted for the bill and 9 Republicans voted to kill it. The measure would have changed possession of small amounts of marijuana from a criminal misdemeanor to a civil infraction, punishable by a $100 fine, and strike a requirement in the law that those who possess marijuana lose their driver's licenses for 6 months. A poll this month reported that 7 in 10 Virginia voters surveyed supported decriminalizing small amounts of marijuana. Kevin Carroll, president of the Fraternal Order of Police of Virginia, and other opponents, said marijuana legalization isn't working in Colorado, saying, quote, "Kids in Colorado right now have the highest incidence of use of marijuana right now than any other state," he said, which is factually untrue and grammatically incorrect. The Denver airport has banned pot-themed souvenirs, fearing the kitsch could taint the state's image. But Spirit Airlines continues to push ads touting the state's marijuana industry for tourism. Marijuana possession and any pot-related advertising were already forbidden. Airport executives extended the ban this month after a retailer sought a freestanding kiosk to sell marijuana leaf boxer shorts and similar items that played off Colorado's place as the first state to allow recreational marijuana sales. Airport officials feared the souvenirs would send the wrong message, quote, "We don't want marijuana to be the first thing our visitors experience when they arrive," end quote, airport spokesman Heath Montgomery said. The spurned retailer is mulling a lawsuit, noting that the souvenirs are legal and that the airport already has a large exhibit celebrating craft brewers, whose product, like marijuana, is legal only for people 21 and older. This has been your 420 Radio News for Thursday, January 29th, 2015. I'm Russ Belville. You can get 420 Radio on the go with the TuneIn Radio app for all mobile platforms. Go to rad-r.us/420TuneIn or just click the TuneIn Radio icon below the live radio feed on 420radio.org. The International Cannabis Business Conference is coming to the Hyatt Regency Hotel in San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, 2015. Don't miss this exclusive opportunity to hear from the experts on the future of marijuana commerce, including scientists like Dr. Carl Hart, Dr. Amanda Ryman, and Dr. Stanton Peel, policy experts like Ethan Nadelman from Drug Policy Alliance, Anthony Johnson from Oregon's Legalization Campaign, travel author Rick Steves from Washington's Legalization Campaign, and California legalization pioneer Dale Sky Jones. Business experts like Harborside's Steve D'Angelo, ArcView Group's Troy Dayton, and UFCW union leader Dan Rush. Cannabis journalists like Ricardo Baca, Steve Bloom, and Doug Fine, and California Republican Congressman Dana Rohrabacher, plus many, many more. Tickets are on sale now at internationalcbc.com, but hurry, last year's conference in Portland, Oregon was a sellout. International Cannabis Business Conference, San Francisco, California, February 15th and 16th, International CBC.
The Green Cross has been an amazing source of cannabis medicines for my pain management. Whether I need edibles or tinctures or topicals, I'm able to combine the two or three to give me really successful pain control.
It's the delivery service that Green Cross provides is just incredible. You get your medicine and it's delivered by a person that you know you trust.
Whether we come to you or you come to us, the Green Cross delivers.
Welcome back, everyone. 14 after the hour. Time for us to go behind the headlines, where Attorney General nominee Loretta Lynch has stated her opposition to President Obama's opinions on marijuana legalization and its relative harm compared to alcohol. This, of course, is kind of surprising and also unsurprising. It's surprising that anyone in this day and age with the Google or any amount of common sense or observation could possibly think that marijuana is more dangerous than alcohol. Surveys show that less than 25% of the people believe that when they're asked about alcohol and marijuana alone. And when you throw in things like sugar and tobacco into the mix, we find that marijuana is considered the most dangerous by the fewest amount of people. That is, more people think sugar is dangerous compared to marijuana. So that's the surprising part, is if you take it at face value to believe that anyone would actually really believe that marijuana was more dangerous than alcohol. But the unsurprising part is to understand that we're talking about a political confirmation process through a Republican Senate that has dedicated itself to obstructing everything President Obama has tried to do. In that particular context, one could possibly interpret Loretta Lynch's remarks as merely being what she has to say in order to get the nomination cleared. Of course, not everyone agrees with that. We've got a quote from Kevin Sabet. Before we get to that, though, let's get to Lynch's quotes. When asked about President Obama's stance on marijuana, referring to the article in which he said it was no more dangerous than alcohol, Lynch said, quote, "I certainly don't hold that view and don't agree with that view of marijuana. I certainly think the president was speaking from his personal experience and personal opinion, neither of which I'm able to share. I can tell you that not only do I not support the legalization of marijuana, it is not the position of the Department of Justice currently to support the legalization, nor would it be the position should I become confirmed as Attorney General," end quote. Now, Kevin Sabet was dancing a jig when he heard this quote. He said, "We are breathing a sigh of relief," referring to smart approaches to marijuana. "Ms. Lynch is a knowledgeable, experienced, justice-minded individual, and for her to come out so adamantly against legalization is extremely encouraging. It will give our efforts a shot in the arm," end quote. But looking deeper into Lynch's comments, you could find that really she's not saying anything that Eric Holder hasn't already said. "I can tell you I don't support legalization of marijuana. It's not the position of the DOJ currently to support legalization," is absolutely true. There would be no difference in their particular stance. The Department of Justice currently does not support the legalization of marijuana. However, it is merely running a non-interference policy in those decisions to legalize marijuana. This was addressed by Senator Session. When Lynch did not commit to changing existing policies, Session said, quote, "I hope that you will cease to be silent," referring to how the department is merely keeping a hands-off approach. Lindsey Graham also questioned Lynch, the senator from South Carolina, and her response was, "It would not be my policy, if confirmed as Attorney General, to continue enforcing the marijuana laws with a focus on violations of enforcement priorities already outlined by the department." So once again, she's basically reiterating the Department of Justice's stance right now. So long as the states follow the Cole memo and stay within the 8 federal priorities, she would not change the enforcement as laid out by the current Department of Justice. And savvy reformers are quite aware of that. First of all, Mason Tvert from the Marijuana Policy Project said, quote, "It would be shocking if she is actually unaware that marijuana is far less harmful than alcohol. The CDC attributes tens of thousands of deaths each year to alcohol use alone, including hundreds from overdose, whereas no deaths are attributed solely to marijuana use, and there's never been a fatal overdose," end quote. Tom Angel from Marijuana Majority says, quote, "We don't need federal officials to personally support legalization. We only need them to respect the will of the voters who have implemented legalization in their own states. As long as they don't spend resources trying to overturn those duly enacted laws, I'm much less concerned about the personal views of Justice Department personnel," end quote. So I agree with those stands. I do believe she is saying what needs to be said in order to clear confirmation. And what she has said is in no way a lie. It very well comports with what the current policies of the Department of Justice are. I think as reformers, we needn't worry about Loretta Lynch being confirmed. And once she is confirmed, I think it will be the status quo for the 4 legal marijuana states and the medical marijuana states as well. With the House and passing and the president signing the spending bill that calls for the Department of Justice to not spend any money going after medical marijuana, I think that will also hold them back. It'll rein them in from wanting to do any sort of operations against legalized marijuana. And besides, We're getting to the point now where there's just too much money involved for them to mess around with it.
I know nothing. Nothing.
All right, folks, it's 20 after. It's 4:20 in the Mountain Time Zone. Denver, Colorado, you can see that little puff of smoke arising over the Rocky Mountains as everyone celebrates their 420 there. I hope you've got some. I hope you can celebrate. And if not, well, we're going to work to legalize it so you'll have access. Stick around. Data mining is next. You can get 420 Radio on the go with the Ustream video app for Android and iPhone. Go to rad-r.us/420Ustream or just click the Ustream app icon for Android or iPhone below the live radio feed at 420radio.org.
Georgia.
Hi, this is Willie Nelson. Alcohol prohibition didn't work in the 1920s, and marijuana prohibition isn't working today. It's time we stopped arresting responsible marijuana smokers. It's the fair thing to do.
For more information, contact NORML, the National Organization for the Reform of Marijuana Laws. Call toll-free 888-67-NORML or visit their website at norml.org.
Fun.
Oh, hello, I'm Big Daddy, and I want you to join me at the Funky Roller Ring. We're partying hard over here, baby, so stop on by, check out the funky grooves, and shake your booty too.
Don't get in a two-piece, brother, don't get in a two-heavy, don't get so you can move a bottle
whenever you get ready. Get.buzz. .buzz is the internet platform that fuels community interest, excitement, and new experiences. .buzz is the premier online destination for internet users seeking the latest news on a variety of topics. .buzz appeals to groups active in blogging, communications, journalism, advertising, and marketing. .buzz offers registrants a stronger alternative to the shrinking namespace of existing top-level domain names, such as .com, .net, and .org. Get your name now at get.buzz. Arguing for the end of adult marijuana prohibition is easy because we have facts, science, reason, compassion, evidence, truth, and logic on our side. It is even easier when researchers catalog it all for us. Learn how to gather the facts on marijuana use, arrests, seizures, rehabs, drug tests, and more in this edition of Drug War Data Mining. Welcome back, everyone. 23 after the hour in the data mines today. Some good news coming out of New York City, where there's been so much strife. And of course, as listeners to this show know, has been the world capital of marijuana arrests for years now. We are starting to see a decline in the number of arrests for simple marijuana possession in New York City. And a lot of this can be attributed to the work of Mayor Bill de Blasio and Commissioner Bratton, Bill Bratton, working to reform the city's stop and frisk policies. Now, to understand how odd and tragic this title of world's marijuana arrest capital is for the Big Apple, you have to understand that New York State is one of the original decriminalization states. Back in the 70s, there were some 11 states that decrimmed. New York did so in 76 or 77, if I'm recalling correctly. And it made the simple possession of an ounce of marijuana or less a non-arrestable infraction. And so you'd think that would be the end of it. If you're caught with a joint or a small bag, why, you should just get a ticket and be on your way. But that's not the way it has been in New York City. In 1995, there were roughly 5,700 arrests for marijuana in New York City. We're talking about a city of 8 million people. By 2011, that number had grown to 50,700 or so. So we've gone increased by a factor of 10, largely an increase that happened during the Giuliani administration and his broken windows theory of policing. The idea that cops really need to rack up a lot of low-level violations for vandalism, graffiti, public urination, parking tickets, and so forth, and that would improve the quality of life and reduce crime by making a neighborhood more livable. Now, crime is down quite a bit in New York City and all across America. It's not the broken windows theory that is to justify this, though. There are much better explanations as to why crime is down that have to do with the economy and, believe it or not, the accessibility to legal abortion. But let's not get off on a tangent here. The way that the marijuana arrests increased so dramatically in New York City had to do with this policy called stop and frisk, where the New York Police Department would round up Black or Latino youths, largely in underprivileged neighborhoods, and give them the pat down as allowed in a Terry stop. The Terry is a case that determined that cops can pat you down without a warrant, without probable cause, just to make sure you don't have weapons or anything that could harm them or any sort of contraband. And what would happen is if the cops felt a pipe or weed in someone's pocket or smelled some weed, they would tell the person to take the weed out of the pocket, you know, empty your pockets, empty your backpack. As soon as that marijuana came into public view, that became an arrestable misdemeanor. And that's what led to the arrests increasing to over 50,000 by 2011. The good news we have now is that year after year, the arrests have dropped. In 2013, there was a total of about 29,000. And in 2014, down to 26,400, a drop of about 9% from the prior year. And a large part of that drop has to do with the two-month drops in the last couple of months of 2014, as de Blasio and Bratton really ramped up this end to the stop and frisk policy. In 2013, December, there were 1,820 arrests. By 2014, it was down to 460 arrests for the entire month, a decline of 75%. In November 2013, there were 2,200 arrests. By 2014, that had declined to 1,280. That's a decline of 42%. Now, the much larger decline in December, that decline of 75%, is probably affected by the slowdown protests that have been going on, where the NYPD are purposefully not enforcing low-level crimes. So that last couple of weeks, since about December 20th, when all of the Eric Garner protests and the NYPD turning their back, when that started, the arrests went down quite a bit. That probably had a large degree of effect there. We will see in the coming months if we continue to see a decline in low-level marijuana arrests, or if those arrests return in order to make up the money that they would normally be getting in the tickets. But the big change here is a change in treating these violations with summonses rather than arrests. And even in the case of the summons, those have declined as well. So it's not as if the pot arrests have all turned into tickets. The summons are down as well by about 10%. So this overall reduction in this stop and frisk violation of people's Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights is leading to an overall decline in harassment of law-abiding marijuana consumers, especially Black and Latino consumers who are much, much more disproportionately affected by these policies. The summons means then we're down to a $100 fine, and instead of a possible 3 months in jail and a criminal record. Now, arrests are still continuing. 26,400 is still a lot of arrests, but a lot of those have to do with actual public use arrests where they see someone smoking weed in public. It's not a perfect solution. We can have problems. For example, even getting a possession ticket can be something that leads to a person being deported, for example. But this is a good change, and it's a step in the right direction.
420 Radio is 24-hour marijuana legalization radio. Are you a hypocrite? If you live a closeted cannabis lifestyle, you are. Read about seven people living a closeted cannabis lifestyle who are on the verge of coming out in The Hypocrites by Mara K. Eaton. Available at areyouahypocrite.net. You can purchase the book on Amazon and Barnes & Noble, also available on iTunes. Check out Mara K. Eaton on Facebook as well. Learn more at areyouahypocrite.net.
Growing plants indoors can be a rewarding hobby, but electricity bills can go through the roof. Then you have to cool down all those big hot lights. It can drive a grower insane. With Lush LED lighting, you can solve many of these issues and double your rewards. Matt and his scientists have developed the perfect light for flowering plants with far less cost and heat. And the results? Very effective. Check out LushLEDLighting.com right now and tell them Radical Russ sent you.
One of the most disturbing elements of the Prohibition War is how it's made police the enemy of otherwise law-abiding cannabis consumers. Fortunately, one group of police officers knows the futility of Prohibition and reaches out to educate the community and current law enforcement. Today, the Russ Belville Show visits with another speaker from Law Enforcement Against Prohibition with one clear message. Cops say legalize drugs.
Welcome back, everyone. 31 and a half after the hour. Time for Cops Say Legalize Drugs. And joining us on the telephone, we've got Rusty White. He's a former canine trainer and corrections officer. Rusty, welcome to the show. Hello, Rusty. Do we have you on the line? Hold on just a second. Got a problem here in the studio. There we go. Rusty, are you there?
Yes, sir.
Oh, sorry about that. I had you on mute. Glad to have you here, sir. And where are you? You're in Bridgeport, Texas. Is that correct?
Yes, sir. Just north of Fort Worth.
Oh, fantastic. All right. We've got some good friends there with the Dallas-Fort Worth Normal chapter. Love that area of the country. Interested here in your background, particularly your training of canine officers. It's been quite interesting as four states now have legalized marijuana. There's this question of what happens now with the canine dogs. Can you give us some of your opinions on that?
Well, it depends on the type of training they've had. Sometimes you can take a dog and train him in a different direction. But most readily, the dogs are probably no longer of use to the department, and they'll have to go home with a handler.
Hmm. So if a dog had previously been trained to alert to cannabis, to marijuana, can it be detrained to not alert on that anymore? Is that like a permanent thing? They're stuck with it?
No, they're stuck with it. They'll still alert on cannabis, but depending on the age of the dog and the type of attitude the dog has, you can retrain them to do other things.
Okay.
But that all depends on the age of the dog.
Okay. I'd read some reports, I believe up in Washington State, where they were just no longer having the dogs be trained. The new dogs, they were having them no longer be trained for marijuana because obviously a dog can't tell you how many ounces it smells. As this happens, what are some of the other things they would train the dogs to do? Explosives detection or protection, or what would they do?
It depends on the dog itself. Each dog is its own individual case. So you can't say that this dog can be trained to do one thing. And like I said, it's an individual case on each canine.
Okay.
But the fact of using a canine to do marijuana searches is kind of absurd anyway.
And what's the problem with it?
Well, if you're at Circle K or getting a soda pop somewhere and a gentleman or a lady gets out of the car and puts their hands on your car and they've got the resin from marijuana on their hands when they touch your car, that scent will stay there for 24 hours at 70 miles an hour.
Wow.
So if you put a dog on the outside of a vehicle to claim that's reasonable cause to search, it's just bull.
Wow. That's you know, something I'd never even considered before. We've told a lot of stories about the studies where they show the handlers will make the dogs false alert, sometimes unconsciously. But this one where you could just accidentally be the victim of someone just touching your car, that's remarkable.
Well, not only that, if you take a car in for service and the guy who's changing your oil or working on your car changing your tires, you know, you can have your vehicle contaminated by the public and through no fault of your own, then have a dog put on the outside of your car and have it marked.
Hmm.
And that's just wrong. That's just wrong.
Absolutely. I'm glad you have that perspective. When you were training the dogs and they were being used, did that concern you at the time? Did you bring this up to anyone?
Oh, yeah. You know, I was in Department of Corrections from 1973 to 78, I worked death row in Admin Seg in Florence, Arizona. And I seen a lot of killings, a lot of rapes involved over drugs inside the walls. Then I went back in the system in 88 and 89. And that's when I became a narc dog handler and track attack dog handler. But unfortunately, or fortunately to me, I feel it's a blessing. My conscience would no longer participate in the farce.
Yeah, and in reading your bio here and having worked in the correctional facilities, I'm sure you saw the revolving door of people coming in and, you know, repeatedly, recidivism. And it had to be, I imagine it must be frustrating to see real criminals being released while someone who planted a pot garden is still serving a mandatory sentence.
Well, that's even more disgusting today. You know, back in my day, we didn't have prisons for profit. Now you got people who are essentially in the cattle ranching business. And when you got more people in prison who have no victim or violence in their crime, that says something real bad about us as a society. Well, we're feeding on people. That's all they are. It's a people ranching business.
A people ranching business. We're speaking to Rusty White with Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. They got all sorts of great speakers like Rusty at LEAP. You can check them out at leap.cc. One of them can come out and speak to your local group and tell the truth about the war on drugs. Now, Rusty, you mentioned the private prisons and the for-profit nature of the prison industry, but there's also this for-profit nature to policing with asset forfeiture and those related articles. What can you tell people about that angle of the drug war?
It's utterly disgraceful and disgusting. When you take our profession and turn them into essentially looters. That's my belief about forfeitures. You know, they're taking property and money away from people and not even charging them. And it causes them to want to do more of it because they get the loot that comes from this illegal activity. In my mind, it's illegal. It's a disgrace to our profession.
Very well spoken. And this drug war, as it rages on, you know, a lot of the attention these days is to marijuana legalization, but Law Enforcement Against Prohibition takes a broader stance and says that all drugs should be legalized to some extent. What would you like to see happen, and how would we convince people that seem to be accepting now of legalizing pot, but are still afraid of meth and coke and all these other drugs?
Well, the first thing you ask them, if we legalize heroin tomorrow, would you do it? Nobody in their right mind would say, yeah, I'm going to be first in line. So that's a fallacy right there. We got to look at other countries around the world, Portugal, Switzerland, the people who've had success, not following our known failure. You know, this is an issue that should be addressed like a medical issue. If somebody lets them their choices get the better of them, they don't need to be locked in a cell away from their families. They need medical attention. They need assistance. You don't destroy families. You don't flashbang babies in cribs over people who have harmed nobody, who have no victim or violence in their crimes, supposed crimes, just to feed a people ranching business. It's asinine.
Now,
and one other thing I'd like to bring up is, you know, I worked in a maximum security prison with 40-foot walls, snitches, every modern technology in the world for surveillance. And if you cannot keep drugs out of a maximum security prison, there is not a prison or a jail on this planet that drugs have not been found in. If you cannot keep them out of there, how on earth do you expect to keep them out of the freest country on earth?
Yeah, it's impossible. And we have great folks like you at Law Enforcement Against Prohibition to remind people of that, that you can either be free or drug-free, but you can't be both. That's very well put.
It's sad.
Now, you're in Texas, and you'd worked in the prison in Arizona. Both states very, very anti-drug. I mean, the pot laws in Arizona are terrible, and Texas isn't that far off. What is it going to take to change the minds of rural and conservative, some folks that are religious, in wanting to follow LEAP's guidance here in ending prohibition?
Well, Well, unfortunately, we've got about 50 years of propaganda and mind conditioning to get over. I would tell everybody that, believe it or not, addiction is a very terrible thing. Unfortunately, there's several different types of addictions. And we have people addicted to the money, the power, the job security of the drug war. That we got more people addicted to that than we do people addicted to drugs. And the hardest thing for these people to do, number one, is admit they were wrong. Because you got to look in that mirror and realize that you've been terrorizing families and destroying families when it wasn't warranted. And that's the hardest thing we have to get by, is people have to start looking in the mirror and say, wait a minute. And taxpayers got to start standing up and say, we're tired of paying for this. We're tired of paying for this when it's BS. We got to take a stand and go over reality, common sense. No more, you know, make up what you want to make up. But go with reality and common sense and documented history. If it hadn't worked in 50 years, look at the harm we've done. Supposed freest nation on earth, and we got more people behind bars than any other country. That's sad. That's just truly sad.
You know, thinking about this from a red state perspective, I'm reminded of the words of President Ronald Reagan, who said, if you want more of something, subsidize it. If you want less of something, tax it. It seems like we've subsidized prisons instead of taxing drugs.
Exactly. And when you, like I say, with these prisons for profit, it's disgusting. Their sole goal is to make money. The way you make money, you have to keep feeding people to it. And right here in Texas, they're guaranteed a certain percent of the population. And what is wrong with that picture?
Yeah, assuming
that
they're
all... the majority of these people have no victim or violence in their crime?
Yeah, and just the assumption that there ought to be a set number of prisoners. Like, there should always be that much crime. Doesn't make a lot of sense.
In Texas, I built 9 prisons here in Texas in construction. And they always pick a little community out in nowhere that has no economic base or nothing. And you put these prisons there. That brings money into the community. That gives people jobs. And therefore, you more or less get support for your ideas by making it a place where people can have jobs and make a living. But you're making jobs on people that shouldn't be there. That's sad.
Absolutely correct. It's we've been speaking with Rusty White, a former canine trainer, corrections officer, sniper for the Department of Corrections. He's out of Bridgeport, Texas, and a member of Law Enforcement Against Prohibition. We've got about 30 seconds, Rusty. Anything you'd like to leave our audience with?
All I would ask is everybody start to wake up and stand up. The only way this is going to change, where your daughters and sons are being put in these prisons for profit, you have to stand up. We as taxpayers and parents, mothers, fathers, have to start standing up and voicing the truth. We can't go down this path any longer.
It's great speaking with you, Rusty. Really appreciate the work you're doing there in Texas. And, of course, everything that Law Enforcement Against Prohibition is up to. Thank you so much for joining us.
Anytime, brother. Give me a call.
We'll talk to you again soon, I'm sure. All right, folks, stay tuned. We've got a little bit of time here for the anti-drug public service announcement of the day, just so we can be fair and balanced. And then when we come back from that, it's time for a radical rant. We're going to discuss, imagine there's no alcohol. It's not easy if you try. The radical rant's coming up. Stay tuned.
Nation.
420 Radio, the activist radio station.
At Herbie's Cannabis Seeds, we pride ourselves on bringing you the best quality seeds from the world's most respected cannabis seed producers, all at the lowest online prices. You can find Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. All cannabis seeds are sold as souvenirs and as a means of preserving cannabis genetics. Herbie's Seeds in no way intends to condone, promote, or incite the use of illegal or controlled substances. We strongly urge all prospective customers to check their national laws prior to placing an order. Herbie's Seeds at herbiesheadshop.com. Proud sponsors of the Russ Belville Show and 420 Radio. In the interest of fair and balanced journalism, the Russ Belville Show presents the anti-drug public service announcement of the day.
Amendment 2 isn't what it seems. Its caregiver provision gives legal protection to marijuana dealers. Even felons and drug dealers could be caregivers. Amendment 2 caregivers don't need background checks or medical training. So what looks like a safeguard is really a loophole. Amendment 2 caregivers can't be arrested or sued if their pot hurts someone. They don't call it the Drug Dealer Protection Act, but they should. Vote no on Amendment 2.
This has been the anti-drug public service announcement of the day. To cure this sort of reefer madness, listen to the Russ Belville Show every weekday on 420radio.org. Adam Hand of Handmade Apparel produces quality custom designs for t-shirts, hats, and other apparel. Handmade Apparel is the official design shop for 420 Radio, among many clients who rely on Adam Hand for everything from short-run custom projects to full-run clothing lines. Visit handmadeapparel.biz to browse the selection of handmade gear or to get a personal quote for your own designs. Handmade Apparel, a proud supporter of 420radio.org.
We must wage what I have called total war against public enemy number one.
I support a change in law to end federal criminal penalties for possession of up to 1 ounce of marijuana.
That marijuana, pot, grass, whatever you want to call it, is probably the most dangerous drug.
Some think there won't be room for them in jail. We'll make room.
I experimented with marijuana a time or two, and I didn't like it, and didn't inhale.
One major responsibility is to encourage people to use less drugs.
Entirely legitimate topic for debate.
Radical Rant.
Welcome back, everyone. 47 and a half after the hour, and today I want you to imagine there's no alcohol. It's not easy if you try. I was motivated for this rant by a few stories. One of which here is this story out of the Denver airport where they're not going to allow this retailer. They're called Highly Legal Colorado, and they market socks and shorts and flip flops and all sorts of stuff with pot leaves on it and, you know, legal Colorado and so forth. And the Denver airport banned this. Denver Harper says, no. We don't want marijuana to be the first thing our visitors experience when they arrive. Not that they'd be experiencing marijuana. They would be experiencing socks and shorts and flip-flops with marijuana. But still, the image of the pot leaf is so disturbing. We just can't have it be seen by people flying into Colorado. We wouldn't want everyone to think that Colorado was a state full of druggies now, would we? But here's the thing. The airport also has a craft brew display. There's an entire walkway in the Denver airport with an exhibit called Colorado on Tap, the State of Brew Culture. It's got pub glasses, beer labels, t-shirts from about 250 different craft brewers from the state of Colorado. And the governor, who, by the way, Governor John Hickenlooper, made his fortune in craft brewing, is quoted in the display extolling Colorado as, quote, a mecca for quality beer, end quote. I am so tired of this double standard. It's somehow terribly offensive to the good people of the Denver airport and the tourism bureaus that adults might see promotion of a legal product safer than alcohol. That is just too much to handle. But we have open celebration of alcohol, a drug that is proven to be addictive and dangerous, not only to the user, but to the people around them. This double standard, this second-class citizenship of marijuana has got to come to an end. And I see this in all sorts of areas. And I just, this whole idea of imagine there's no alcohol, just imagine taking the word alcohol out and replacing it with meth whenever someone talks about alcohol. Or imagine just walk down your city streets, turn on your television, and just make a mental note of how much reference to alcohol you will see in any given day. Or for that matter, prescription drugs. It's hard to imagine an American culture without alcohol. Hell, Budweiser gets lauded for it. I mean, there's television shows now to show just the Super Bowl ads that will be on the Super Bowl. Shows dedicated to marketing that are, a lot of them, marketing drugs. You got Cialis, you got your Viagra, and you got your Budweiser. All drugs, mostly recreational drugs. And yet, marijuana, something that's legal in now four states, is like homosexuality in the 50s. It's the drug that dare not mention its name. And it's ridiculous. If they could only understand, and this is what's frustrating, because from the point of view of a prohibitionist, they don't want people smoking pot. They think pot smoking in and of itself is bad, and especially because it might entice the children. And what they don't understand is the key to their goal is more pot freedom, not less. The key to their goal is more mainstreaming of marijuana, not less. The more marijuana remains this forbidden fruit, this outlawed drug, this dangerous thing that cannot be seen, the more it retains that forbidden fruit quality, that thing that attracts rebels and outcasts and people that want to show how cool they are. The more marijuana just becomes dull, mainstream, mundane, boring, everyday thing, the less interested kids will be in it. I'm reminded also of, in Portland, we have a festival called the Waterfront Blues Festival. And we have another festival called Portland Hempstock. Now, for the Portland Hempstock, and both festivals, by the way, take place at the same place, the Portland Waterfront, in this kind of bowl on the banks of the Willamette River, kind of a half bowl facing the river, kind of a natural amphitheater kind of thing, and takes place at the same location during summertime. In the case of the Portland Hempstock, though, there had to be massive security, bag checks to make sure no one's bringing in pot. No pot. People want, police, not actual police, but monitors, I guess, wandering around the grounds to make sure no one's smoking pot in public. Can't have the sight of pot. People can't have their pot, can't be using their pot. Oh my God, pot is terrible. In a city where 71% of the people voted for its legalization, we just can't have pot be seen by the public. But if you go to that Waterfront Blues Festival, there's one cursory check when you go in. And once you go in, there are numerous beer and wine vendors, craft beers, local wines. And the entire amphitheater grounds is just packed with people. They've got their little, you know, their low back garden chairs and their blankets, and they get some food and make a little picnic out of it. And they got their beer. They're drinking their beer in public, drinking their wine in public. Kids are running around all over the place. In order to get your beer or wine, you got to get ID'd and get your little wristband, right? So we make sure that you've been ID'd. And nobody bats an eye. Nobody's worried about a message it's sending to the children. Why, if the children see all the adults openly drinking alcohol, they'll think it's okay. That's the kind of logic we get offered with marijuana. Why does it not apply to alcohol? Or, perhaps a better question, why do you not care about sending that message about alcohol? Because apparently we don't. Apparently, with alcohol, we can send a message that it is normal, mundane, kind of a celebratory part of life, something that more than half of the people enjoy, something that's not for kids, but something that kids are welcome to do once they become the age where you're allowed to do it. Celebrated in our culture. And I fail to understand what the difference would be if instead of beers, those people were smoking joints. Aside from, and I will grant, booze doesn't have, there's no secondhand booze. Unless a guy pukes on your shoes, that's secondhand booze, right? But, you know, there's not booze smoke floating around that you might, your kids might inhale, you might inhale. So I'll understand that, and I will accede to that difference. But you know what else they've got at the Waterfront Blues Fest? Smoking areas. Places where the tobacco smokers, so they won't be smoking their tobacco amongst all the families that have their little picnic thing going on. There's a place where they can go and walk to the side and actually smoke a cigarette or cigar or e-cigarette. All I ask for marijuana and its consumers is the same consideration as alcohol drinkers and cigarette smokers get. I think the vast majority of us pot smokers at some sort of festival event like that, we'd be fine with going to the designated smoking area. That would be fine. I understand the concerns of adults and parents of children that don't want to inhale pot smoke, even secondhand smoke. I understand they get concerned. They go to a concert and they can't help but smell smoke and it kind of bugs them. I understand that concern. And I think pot smokers are willing to make those concessions. But this idea that they have, this cultural fear that makes it so that not only can there not be open pot smoking and we can't dare see someone smoking a joint or holding the plant, but to extend that to the point where we can't even have boxer shorts with pot leaves on them for sale in an airport, it just smacks of hypocrisy when I can buy shot glasses in an airport. Right? I'm not talking about a beer t-shirt. I'm talking about alcohol paraphernalia. It'd be just the same as buying a glass pipe in an airport. And yet nobody ever makes the comparison. Nobody ever holds alcohol to the standard of being a drug. And I wonder if some of these people who have such a prohibitionist bent, that maybe their point is, look how awful it is with alcohol, and it's going to get to be that awful with marijuana. I would counter that by saying, if the alcohol has gotten to be so bad, why have you given up on fixing that? If you allow alcohol to continue to be treated so openly, you provide the motivation and incentive for marijuana to shoot for that. If you actually work to bring public acceptance of alcohol down a bit, marijuana couldn't want to be higher than that level. But they're afraid of taking on the big alcohol lobbies and the big money that's involved in alcohol and the cultural acceptance of alcohol, because they find it easier to pick on the smaller group, the less well-funded group, the group without the lobbyists. And the good news in that respect is that is changing. ArcView Group says we are going to be and are the biggest growth industry in this country. And that's what Kevin Sabet fears, is that the will of the people, like the 71% in Portland or the 56% in Oregon or the 51% nationwide, might actually get to be heard in the halls of government. Because we know you don't get a play without the money these days. We'll talk some more about this in Hour 2, Toker Talk Radio. That's coming up next. We'll also take your calls at 971-533-7111 if you got some comments on the subject. But that's it for Hour 1. Thanks for joining us. For everyone here at 420 Radio, I'm Radical Russ. Until next time, take care of each other, tokers.
This is the Russ Belville Show. The
Russ Belville Show is blogging and podcasting daily at RadicalRuss.com.
You take a seat, you plant it, you grow it, you try it, you roll it, you smoke it. You take a seat, you plant it.